Hey, friends, and welcome to the podcast today. I am excited to have back with me Dr. Kelly Casperson. She was first on the podcast last March as I discovered her podcast, You Are Not Broken, and we talked about the very serious subject of sexual health over 50. That is episode 56. If you're interested, and you should definitely go back and listen. Kelly is a urologist with advanced training in pelvic medicine and surgery. But most important for us, she is working hard to normalize how we talk about and approach sex. Because let's face it, a lot of us were left in the dark on the subject as we grew up. Now, after she found no tools in medical school to teach her about female sexual function, she set out to educate herself by reading everything she could get her hands on, which led to other study. Now, she doesn't consider herself a sexual expert, but can't keep what she has learned to herself, which is why she has written the book with the same name as her podcast, You Are Not Broken, to share with all of us. She calls it her advocacy work, and I would agree with her. So let's get into it. Hey, friend, welcome to your safe place to begin redesigning midlife. Do you know deep inside that it is time to start focusing on your health and wellness, but have no idea where to start? Do you wake up every morning saying, "I'm starting today," and end it with, "I'll start again tomorrow"? I'm Leslie, and when I turned 50, I felt the same and longed for some sense of self-control and new confidence in who I was becoming in midlife. I finally realized that the change I needed was up to me. In this podcast, you are going to find everything you need to build your healthiest midlife today, to live happier and longer tomorrow. So embrace being a beginner again, open your heart to change, and let's get to redesigning. Hey Kelly, welcome back to the podcast. How are you doing?
I'm so great. Thanks for having me back.
Well, I have to mention, since we talked last, you have gotten a haircut and it is fabulous. I'm a big short hair fanatic. I love it. And
Well,
it
where's
looks
your short
great.
hair?
I have had short hair most of my adult life, but I do this thing where I let my hair grow out. And then one day I'm like, yeah, screw this. And I cut it all off. I go pixie. I mean, I don't go like shoulder length. I go pixie.
I
And then
can't
I'm
wait to
like,
see it.
okay. And
Give me
then it
it.
grows again. Well, this summer I was so tempted to cut my hair. Do you want to know why I didn't?
Why?
This is so bad. I had just had some photos taken for my website and for the podcast, and I was like, yeah, I'm not doing that again. So I
I
didn't cut my
know. Well,
hair.
I don't have any new headshots of my new hair. People are like, give me an updated headshot. And I'm like, I don't have time. But yeah, my hair needs its own headshot for sure.
It's fabulous. And so
Thank you.
you need to follow Kelly on Instagram so you can see some
See
pictures
what I'm
of her.
talking about?
It's
Yeah,
awesome.
it's feisty.
It is. That's a good word for it. It's feisty. All right. So, full disclosure, the last time that we talked, I will tell you, I was kind of scared and nervous because I felt like going into the conversation with you that I had to know everything about sex to be able to talk to you. And if I were to admit that I didn't know, it would be kind of shameful and I'm kind of like, I'm over 50. I should know all this stuff, but I didn't. I faked like I did. But then I read your book and I'm kind of like, I learned that not knowing everything is kind of normal for everybody. And so I was so relieved, actually. So first of all, tell me why you wrote this book.
Well, I'm a reader, so I just went in my journey of like not knowing anything. And to go back for a second, like I went to med school and I operate around the pelvis and in the vagina. I literally operate in the vagina as a day job, right? And like I didn't I didn't know what I know now about female sexual health because I wasn't taught. Like the people who are in the pelvis aren't taught. And so nobody else should feel bad because everybody else is doing like other jobs like accounting and teaching and like, you know, being chefs. Like they're never even near the pelvis, right? So like the experts didn't know. But as I dove deep and I'm like, I want to know, I'm curious. Oh, we actually know stuff. It just isn't getting out there. I started reading the books and the books came into like basically two separate categories. One is very academic. I'm a PhD. I want to tell you about my research. Mm-hmm. And then the other book was like Eastern philosophy, call it a yoni, 3-hour tantric sex, you know, give it a new name sort of thing. And I'm like, neither one of these is approachable and like talks to the busy westernized American woman slash couple. Uh-huh. And so I really like, after you read enough, you realize what's missing. And I wrote what I thought would have been very helpful for me to have, what I want for my children to have, what I would want for my sister to have. Something where it's like, you're not going to sit down and read a 300-page dry academic book about sex and feel better about yourself, right?
Or even want to have it after reading.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I created what was missing. I felt.
I mean, I read it and I was kind of like, okay, why wasn't there something like this when I was, you know, becoming sexually active or even through my 20s, 30s? Well, even now, you know, it's amazing that it has taken this long for someone like you to sit down and write a book like this.
Yeah. And I think, you know, where this is going, you know, and like thinking about book number two or whatever, but where it's going is like, even if we got taught something decently reasonable when we were 15 or 16, right? Like, let's say we even got decent sex ed then, which is usually a disease and pregnancy prevention plan. Mm-hmm. But like, we still need a new adult sex ed at age 40, at age 35, after you have a baby, after you, you know, the kids are out of the house, after you're in this relationship for a long time and you're like, I'm not really spontaneous anymore. Like an adult sex ed that speaks to what's going on, because your life is so much different than you when you were in eighth grade health class.
Right. Right. I mean, we all grow mentally and physically. So everything is going to change as we get older. So I know that you have a lot of patients that are women in their 40s and 50s. What do you think is the number one thing that they don't know about their bodies and themselves that they probably should know?
Yeah. Can I have two answers?
Yeah.
So, okay.
Have three number if
one,
you want.
Number one's the short one. The short one is the clitoris is where your orgasms come from. Mm-hmm. Putting something in your vagina does not frequently give women orgasms. Like that is basic anatomy 101. The vagina is like a scrotum. You don't stroke the scrotum and expect a man to have an orgasm. It's nearby, but it doesn't get the job done. Right. And really, really educating women, especially women who are in heterosexual relationships, whose main form of sex has been narrowed down to penis and vagina, that it's okay if you don't have an orgasm doing that because you're in the vicinity, but you're not hitting the target. Mm-hmm. But if you want sex to be equally satisfying, to be equally pleasurable, you got to expand your definition of sex and pay attention to the clitoris. So that my number one short answer would be anatomy education. Then the number two answer would be everything in your life affects your sex life. Like your sex life is not in a bubble, right? And so many women, like the classic recent example is a woman like, but what do I do about the dishes in the sink? I got to do the dishes in the sink before I go have sex, before I can relax. And like realizing the way you live your life affects your sex life. And so many people are in this like, go, 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 check all the boxes, get all the stuff done every single day. Don't rest. Don't have pleasure. Don't take a break. Don't learn about your body. Don't feel your feelings, mm-hmm. you know, produce, show up again, produce, be exhausted. That affects your sex life. And like, so many people don't realize it. Like if you're sleeping poorly, if your health is bad, if your thoughts are negative, if your relationship with your significant other is not doing well, right? If you think the dishes in the sink getting done is more important than your sex life, that's important to know. Mm-hmm. So it's like everything in your life is affecting your sex life. And maybe people don't want to hear that. I'm not sure what they want to hear. I think a lot of people just want a quick fix, right? Like,
yeah.
Can I buy a supplement?
Well, what do they say when you tell them that?
Usually stunned silence.
Yeah.
Because I think, it's such a bigger ask to be like, why don't you use this problem of low desire or this whatever your perceived sexual problem is, as actually a gift to say, how am I living my life right now? Why am I not? I just had a friend quit her job and I called her this morning and she didn't answer. She texted me and she's like, I was in the bedroom with my husband. It's like, you know, 8:30 in the morning on a Friday. She's like, oh, it's amazing what quitting your job does to your sex life. And I'm not telling people to quit their jobs, but just to say, like, your stress and how busy you are plays a role in where you put sex in your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this person who, like, thinks she would have said she was not, you know, not that interested in sex, didn't really want it, blah, blah, is now like having sexy time at just 8:30 in the morning with her husband on a Friday.
Right.
Right. It's like who we think we are is not actually maybe who we are.
Yeah.
We're just a product of the life that we're living.
Yeah.
But I think it's a very deep, soulful, philosophical, amazing opportunity. Whereas I think some people are like, I don't want to have to deal with having to look at my life. I just like my sex life to be different. And it's like, you can't. It's part of your life.
Yeah, it's all one thing.
It's all related. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good for your friend, by the way. Congratulations. I know.
I just texted her back and I'm like, yeah, I'm not urgent. I'll talk to you later. Like, good for you.
Yeah.
Good job.
You are not the dishes. She does not have to answer you back right away.
Totally. I'm like, you have your good morning. Okay. I'll talk to you later.
Yeah. So another thing that, that I realized when reading your book, well, I knew this, but seeing it on the page was kind of like, an aha moment. You know, being in my 50s, of course, perimenopause and menopause is a huge thing. It's looms large in my life and in the lives of a lot of women in this community. So when I'm reading your book, you know, to hear that perimenopause can start as early as your late 30s, average age of being in menopause being 51, the fact that, I mean, you will probably be dealing with this thing for over half your life, and there is no manual for it, no preparation for it, threw me for a little bit of a loop. I mean, that was a hefty piece of, it wasn't information, I knew it, but when you hear it that way, you're kind of like, oh, all right. Do you get that response from other people of, oh, I'm going to be doing this for half my life?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think the education on menopause is so bad, right? Like, we're decently okay at, like, condoms can prevent pregnancy. Like, we're decently okay at, like, some of these facts about, like, our bodies and our lives. But people just think menopause is a hot flash. And if you didn't have hot flashes or your hot flashes are done, then you aren't dealing with menopause anymore.
Right. And then, like, it's over.
Then it's over and it's a thing in the past. And what they don't understand, and I see this a lot in, like, you know, my mid-50s women, they're at the top of their career, they're exercising, they look great, they feel great, they're owning life. And I'm like, who do you want to be when you're 74? How do you want to age? And most of us don't have time. We're not sitting around thinking about that. But I'd say the average, you know, middle woman in her 50s wants to be doing what she's doing in some form when she's 74.
Right.
And it's like to actually take the time and to think about that. And now I don't know if I'm answering your question, but it's like to prioritize sleep and exercise and eating right. Because if you want this to keep going, you've got to do the things that make that 74-year-old grateful you put in the thought. Right. And I think part of that is deciding if hormones are right for you. You can't just start them when you're 74. They're not as safe to start when you're 74. But the people who prioritize bone health, brain health, heart health, you know, all the skin health, pick an organ of like what you do now in your 50s, whether or not you have hot flashes, affects who you're going to be when you're 74. And it's incredibly empowering to think about it and to be like, oh, I get to make that 74 be glad I put in this time and effort.
Right.
And not just be like, well, what happens at 74 just happens. Like that actually turns out poorly when you're like, whatever.
Yeah. And that's exactly, you know, I was telling you before we started recording that I had changed the name of this podcast. And it's because I had talked to a few women that were in their 70s who had told me that they had in their 50s, you know, their parents had passed away, early in life. And so it was kind of a wake up call that they knew they needed to start taking care of themselves in their 50s so that their 70s would be spectacular. And I think that a lot Amazing. Of women don't think about that. Yeah,
they don't. For sure. And I mean, I have the immense privilege of seeing people throughout their ages every single day at my day job. Right. And so I see, like, I see this 70-year-old and I see this 70-year-old. Mm-hmm. And it's just pattern recognition. Right. Mm-hmm. Of like, what do they do? It's the same thing that like anybody over 90, I ask their top tips. Anybody who's been married for 50 years, I get their top tips because it's like I might as well get some, you know, wisdom of the ages from sure. these hundreds of people that are coming in to, that I get to meet. Right. But it's like once you get, I think everybody can be pretty on par besides, you know, some bad luck or genetic issues when you're 18. Mm-hmm. But if you want to be thriving with a brain and a body that functions as best as it can when you're 70, like the spread really starts to happen pretty early, right? Mm-hmm. Like to the point where you see some 50-year-olds, you're like, you're probably not going to make it. Right. Because of some of the choices that you're making. And I only say this to be like, why aren't we more curious about this? Right. We have so much data on exercise. We have right. so much data on all this stuff. And we're kind of like, well, I just hope it turns out well of like, no, it's within your power to be like a very functional 70-year-old.
Right. Yeah. It's all about choices. So getting back to menopause and women in their 50s, when they come into your office, what's the thing that they want to know about? What's the thing they want to talk about to you about?
They want to feel, by and large, they want to feel heard. I think, you know, by the time they find me, it's because it's gone poorly somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And like, and it's, I get the whole gamut of like, oh, it's just a natural thing. And you just breathe through it and go find some herbal tea and your grandmother dealt with it. So they get very dismissed, or they get like, you know, I just had one whose doctor told them like, I don't believe in perimenopause.
Oh my.
I'm like, it's not a belief. It's not like it's like saying you don't believe in puberty. Right. Or like, you don't believe in like getting pregnant. Like these are just things that happen in your life. So like really wanting to be heard. More than anything, you know, and I think most people realize like there isn't just one thing. It's you know, we can try things. You could try different doses of hormones. You could try, you know, all. It's like we just got to kind of optimize. But they just want to feel heard and acknowledge that like what they're going through is real.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So when they come in, and if we were going to talk about. Say we're going to talk about menopause and sex for a second, and they come to you and they say, I need something because I just don't desire sex anymore. Is that a thing? Can you?
Oh, yeah.
Can you have sex without desire?
100%.
Okay.
Like a lot of the researchers will be like, why do we even have desire as an essential ingredient? Go have good sex. And what I like, and we can talk about desire more. So it's like, we can talk about desire, but then we can say, why do we even need desire? Mm-hmm. Because a sex drive, Freud was the one who kind of said libido, right? That sex was a drive. But if you think about it in comparison to the other drives that we have, eating, drinking, water, and sleeping, right? The less we have of those things, the more we want them. Our body's literally like, you're going to die without these. With sex, the less sex we have, the less we want it usually.
Mm. Yeah.
Especially as we age, right? So to say like it's this inherent drive and I'm broken because I don't have it is like, no, it's not like hunger or sleep or thirst. It's not a drive like that. We put drive in, we being the sex researchers. So, you know, McKinsey and all the original sex researchers, they didn't have desire involved because these people were just like volunteering to come in and have sex in a lab, right? Like there was already like an assumed, like, I'm cool having this sex. Mm-hmm. And then we said, well, maybe something triggers our interest in sex. Let's call that desire. Let's put desire before the sexual, you know, arousal, orgasm, resolution model. Kaplan. And then Rosemary Besson came out and she's like, yeah, no, that's not women's lived experiences. They might desire sex while they're having sex. They might desire sex after they had sex. I mean, how many stories do I hear of like, oh my God, that was so good. Wasn't that good? Why do I always forget how good that is? Will you remind me how much I liked that? They're desiring sex after they had sex. Right. And so I think a lot of this whole like desire, I need desire. Where's my desire? Fix my desire is a lot of miseducation of like, you realize it's not essential.
Right.
Go have good sex. And a lot of my belief is a lot of women's low desire is they're having shitty sex in the first place. Yeah. So I can give you a hormone. I can give you an FDA approved medication for hypoactive sexual desire disorder. These things exist now. But like, if you're not prioritizing your orgasm and you're doing sex because it's a chore or it hurts or all these other things, I'm not going to fix your desire by changing your hormones. Right. Now, some women will say, I just want to, I desire to desire. They liked that feeling of spontaneous desire. Testosterone, if any hormone, can be the one that plays a role. Dopamine, get out of your relationship and get a new relationship. It's called the limerence phase. It's that 6 to 12 months of a new relationship where you're literally on a dopamine cocaine that high.
Honeymoon phase.
Yeah. Yeah. And that goes away the more our brain, this is just brain and neuroscience, the more our brain just adapts to what's familiar. We don't seek it out. Right? Dopamine is released in the pursuit of a reward. So if you don't have a good reward, you're not going to get that desired dopamine. Mm. So it's wonderfully complex, but at the end of the day, it's like, do you need desire to have a great sex life? Zero. No.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Man, your brain sure does play a huge part in this whole thing.
It's 100%.
Just, yeah. So I want to talk about hormone therapy. And in your book, you say, you know, we don't call it hormone replacement therapy anymore.
They rebranded it.
And that is because why?
They rebranded it because they didn't want it. When you say it's a replacement, it makes it sound more like a deficiency, which then people argue like, is this a deficiency? And we're like, well, you have less estrogen than the man sitting next to you. So like, technically you have low hormones, it might be a deficiency, but they didn't like the way it sounded. Just like we rebranded vaginal atrophy because people didn't like the word atrophy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
what
fine.
What is it called now?
Genital urinary syndrome of menopause, or GSM. It's a huge mouthful.
GSM. That sounds.
But it actually explains why it's happening, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, it's just called menopause hormone therapy, not replacement.
Yeah, and I like that
because it's a natural state.
Yeah. Yeah,
right. I air sure. quotes on podcast, but like it's a natural state. So I guess it's semantics and people who argue like, then is it deficient? Well, compared to people who are 30, yeah, but mm-hmm. you're not 30 anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, I love the philosophy behind it, but they rebranded it for better or for worse.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's words and they work. I like yeah. that. It makes me yeah. feel better.
Yeah.
So how do you know if you need hormone therapy? Where do you get tested? Do you talk to your doctor about it? Is it just something that everybody is going to need when
no.
they get
I mean,
to a certain point?
The question is, I think the question is need, right? Like, what does need mean?
Right. How do you know if you need it?
Certainly, if you are having your classic menopause symptoms, hot flashes, night sweats, increased anxiety, increased depression, those might be good signs. That you might need it. Nobody has to go on hormones. That's the thing. Like nobody has to go on it. It's not FDA approved for the prevention of any disease except for osteoporosis. It is FDA approved for primary prevention of osteoporosis. So you, like me, are a thin Caucasian female. We are high risk for osteoporosis. So we certainly could say, hey, I want to go on it because the rate of hip fracture is astronomical when we age. And that's part of, that's like, well, I don't feel my osteoporosis. Like, no, you can't feel your osteoporosis, but you lose bone density 2% a year after the age of, you know, actually starts before menopause.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like once you're 75 and you fell, it's too late. You can't go reprotect your bones. And so right. that's another reason to be like, you know, when you talk to your 52-year-old and you're like, how do you want to age? Uh-huh. We know hormone replacement therapy decreases all cause fractures. Whether or not you even have osteoporosis, it decreases the risk of a fracture when you fall. Because estrogen is incredibly important for bone density.
Right.
Way more so than calcium, vitamin D, which has kind of been sold to women of like, well, you can't be on hormones, so take calcium and vitamin D. What did we do to those women? We gave them a bunch of kidney stones. Because we gave them a bunch of calcium in pill form.
I did not know that.
Good for urologist business, bad for the people with the kidney stones.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yep. But so, going back to your question of who needs it.
Yeah.
I can't say who needs it. Nobody needs it like you're, you know, they, as far as you're going to die tomorrow if you don't have it. It's not like oxygen.
So, but should you get, should you get tested to see where you are?
No.
No, you shouldn't?
No. Where are your hormones after menopause? Zero.
Oh, okay.
Do you need me to test you to tell you your hormones are zero after menopause? No. And where are your hormones in perimenopause? Fluctuating like crazy.
Right.
It's reverse. It's reverse puberty. Up, down, up, down, up, down, 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 up, 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 down. So if you, if I check your hormones in perimenopause, you're going to, more than likely, you're going to hang on to that number. And that number was just Tuesday at 10 a.m.
Right.
And it changed. Yeah. So it's easy. Like now that I've explained to you why you don't get tested, it's a lot more clear of why the, you know, experts don't recommend getting tested. If a 60-year-old's like, I want to see where my hormones are. I'm like, you haven't had a period in 10 years. I know where your hormones are. This is not a mystery. Like, you save your money. Right. And then a 48-year-old who's still having periods, but like crazy hot flashes, night sweats, anxiety, all this stuff. It's like, I know you're in perimenopause. Why? Because you're having all the symptoms and you still have periods, therefore perimenopause. And if I test your labs, it's just going to be your lab on a Friday at 3 p.m. and it's going to be different next week.
Right.
So save your money. But there's plenty of people that want you to spend lots and lots of money getting your saliva and your urine and all this stuff tested. And you're just giving them your money. Scientifically, it's not useful.
So if you're having menopause symptoms, say I'm going in to get my annual in a couple of weeks and I'm having menopause symptoms. Do I just say to my gynecologist, hey, I would like to be put on estrogen? What do I say? What do I ask for? And what if she says, yeah, no, I don't think that, I don't, maybe next year.
Yeah, yeah. So I always say, like, advocate for yourself, but don't be confrontational. Doctors are humans, and like all humans, we like working with nice people, right? And so I think some people go in, they're like, I'm going to argue. And it's like, well, be nice. Be as educated as you can. Be nice. Ask why. Because really what you're looking for is a relationship, right? A relationship to be like, hey, I've been reading a lot about this, and it seems like hormones improve hot flashes by about 80% in the stuff I've been reading. I would like to just try it for like 3 months. Let's just try it and see how I feel. I promise if it doesn't work, you know, we'll either change the dose or I'll go off. And if they're a hard no, be like, can I understand why you think no? Do you think I'm too high risk to try it? Why do you think it's a no? Mm-hmm. Because there are some absolute contraindications, right? We're still not comfortable giving it to women who've been treated for breast cancer. If you have really bad cirrhosis or liver disease, if you have a history of a blood clot, stroke, or heart attack, if you have like bad gallbladder disease, crazy high cholesterol, right? There are some things where, yeah, it's going to be too high risk to go on hormones, but that's not the average woman. So just go in. And what I recommend is say, can I just try it? And let's make a 3-month follow-up and I'll update you on how it's going. And then to know, like, one, there's so many different doses, right? That you might need to adjust it and you might not nail it on the head right away. And then your insurance might decide that this patch is too expensive and you want to go on to, you know, the cream or the ring, whatever. But just know, like, it's a kind of a process to figure it out. But once you figure it out, if you're happy. And, you know, so that's what I'd say. Education, compromise. Yeah. Just offer to try it. Can I just try it for 3 months? Bring in the 2022 NAMS guidelines. They're free online. Like, the guidelines literally say the benefits outweigh the risks in women between the ages of 50 and 60. If there was a drug for men that made them live on average 3 years longer, do you think that they would all be on it?
Yeah, every single one.
Yeah. So why aren't we on hormones?
Right. Right. Are hormones covered by insurance usually?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Uh-huh. Okay.
Not all, you know, everybody's got their, like, these are cheaper and this is on formulary and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, hormones are not new. Mm-hmm. I think they should be much cheaper than they are. Mm-hmm. But the FDA approved medications that are covered by insurance are a hell of a lot cheaper than the compounded $1,000 pellets that people are using. And the reason that people are using them is because they want to feel better. And they probably have been poo-pooed by their primary care doctor and their doctor doesn't know how to treat hormones. Like, I don't blame the woman who's going in to get the pellets. She just wants to feel better, but it's not the safest option. It's not the cheapest option.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the vaginal estrogen cream, because I know that you suggest it. Oh, you were also in the book, you were talking about, the changes of a woman's body in her, in how would you say, in her sexual areas. They atrophy. You were talking about that. And this was all news to me. Can you share with the audience what you talk about in that area?
So estrogen is, we have estrogen receptors in every cell in our body, right? And again, a little bit of education goes a long way in understanding this. So menopause is not just hot flashes. Menopause is your body doesn't see estrogen anymore, to the point that it can't ovulate and support a pregnancy, but also to the point that other things are compromised because they've spent years bathed in estrogen and they actually function quite well with estrogen. Thank you very much. And now estrogen's gone away. So there's estrogen receptors in our inner ears, estrogen receptors in our hair, in our skin, in our gut, in our arteries, right? So we've got some in our bladder, got some in our clitoris, our vulva, our vagina, all the pelvic structures. So when estrogen goes away, the tissues have less blood flow, have less collagen, have less elasticity. We need to be stretchy to make sex comfortable. We need to have good blood flow to help with arousal and orgasm, right? And so these tissues, the atrophy is again the word people don't like, but they decline. If you want to, I'm still trying to figure out the right word, but they change. They change because you don't have estrogen anymore. And the simple thing to do is put estrogen back in the pelvis. And pelvis estrogen, it's called low dose vaginal estrogen. It's different than systemic estrogen. It's about 1/300th of the dose of systemic hormones. And for comparison, systemic menopause hormones is about 1/10th to 1/20th the dose of what birth control is. So just to give people perspective, we're not talking about like super therapeutic bodybuilding steroid doses of hormones. These are small amounts. It's just like using enough to get your symptoms met, protect your bones, protect your heart, not help you not have hot flashes, help you sleep. We're not trying to make you 18 again. So really, really
Which would
small
be
amount.
awesome, but
Would it? Remember
maybe
how
for a day.
our brain works.
True.
Is
Okay.
neuroscience. Our brain works by not accurately remembering the past. So, and the
Gotcha.
people are like, I'd love to be 18 again. It's like, really? Would you? We were pretty insecure about life. We had no money. We cared deeply what other people thought about us and had no agency. So I think
Okay.
most women are like, yeah, actually, no.
Yeah. All right.
We're happy where
You're
we are.
right. I digress. You're
I
right.
know, but we had to do some brain remember. Remember, our
Yeah.
memories aren't solid.
Oh, that's right.
So vaginal estrogen's awesome. It just went over the counter in the UK. It's also over the counter, I think, in Israel, possibly in Finland. So it's over the counter. That's how really safe it is. I don't see that happening anytime soon in America. It would be
Really?
great, but I still think it's way too expensive. Not used enough. We know about 4% of women are, if you just look at prescription, use in America, less than 4 to 5% of women are on vaginal estrogen. I see women all the time. They come in, they stopped having sex 7 years ago because it hurt. And my goal is to move the needle. I think of it more as like, why do you want it to hurt first to then go get help for it? Versus, hey, I'm 55, I'm 50, I'm noticing a little bit of dryness, or maybe I'm not, but I just want my tissues to be healthy. I want to get on some vaginal estrogen. Why do we wait for it to break before we do something about it?
Right. Exactly. Yeah, we don't do skincare once our skin starts to
Yeah, once you get the skin
dry
cancer, you
up.
should start using sunscreen.
Right. Yeah,
Right. No.
exactly. So do you think every woman in perimenopause and early part of menopause should be on estrogen cream, vaginal estrogen cream?
I think at least starting in the late 50s, because generally urinary syndrome of menopause really starts kicking in 5 to 8 years after your last
Okay.
menstrual period. Certainly, there are women in perimenopause who notice dryness with sex, pain with sex, tightness. So again, we're not all the exact same. I think it's too steep to say like, hey, you who knows nothing about menopause or your body, I want you to put this cream in your vagina twice a week prophylactically to possibly prevent something in the future. I think it's a big ask.
Right.
But to me, I'm like, hey, if you are 56, 58, things are going to continue to maybe get more uncomfortable. Do you want to wait for things to break first, or you want to maintain some structures? And again, it's the philosophy of the woman, right? Is it the woman who's like, I want to be my best self at 74. I don't want to wait to have pain and stop having sex before I seek help. And the other thing, again, genital urinary. So UTIs go up after menopause because of the lack of estrogen, overactive bladder, nocturia, getting out of bed at night to pee. And vaginal estrogen helps all of that too. And I basically say the bladder and the vagina share a wall. This is a bladder medication. We're just putting it in the vagina, because I think a big misconception a lot of women have is that I'm not sexually active, so I don't need vaginal estrogen. And I say, I'm not giving you vaginal estrogen for a partner. I don't care about him. I care about your pelvis, and you are more than your ability to have something in your vagina. Mm-hmm. So it's wonderful for the bladder.
I mean, that sounds like a win-win, really. Totally. So is this something, again, when you go in and see your gynecologist, or even your primary, I guess?
Yeah, primary. You don't need to see a gynecologist.
Okay. Okay.
And your nurse practitioner, your physician's assistant, whoever you see. You can just say, hey, I'd like to get started just on a little bit of low-dose vaginal estrogen. Can I get the generic?
Okay.
You need it to be cheap. And use the GoodRx app. For anybody who doesn't know, that's going to be your cheapest bet for medications. People don't know, in 2022, it actually is more expensive to use your insurance now, mm-hmm. sometimes than mm-hmm. cash, yeah. which is, when did that happen? Yeah. But like, people just think vaginal estrogen cream costs $200, and it doesn't. It costs $26.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ballpark is different. It's different in different locations. Right. Check your local GoodRx app. But yeah, again, this is for years, and we need to be cheap, and we need to be sustainable.
So I want to go back, because one of the chapters in your book, you talk about communication, and communication is key, is kind of like my philosophy in the house on everything, on every subject. I mean, you got to talk about it. But a lot of women who are in menopause and their body's changing, and they're still trying to process everything and learn everything that's going on with themselves, you know, they may have trouble talking to their partner about what's going on. Do you have some good tips of how to bring these things up with your partner?
Yeah. I mean, I think number one is just awareness of your discomfort with it, and realize that that's not you. That was society telling you that menopause is bad, that, you know, the way you feel about your body isn't valid. You know, all this shit that we get told, and then we think we're the problem, right? It's like, No. Menopause is normal. If you're blessed enough to live long enough, it's going to happen.
Right.
And just really normalize it. And then to realize, like, guys don't know about menopause. Like, he has no idea what you're going through unless you explain it to him. And a very good, like, just, you gotta explain it in a way that they'd understand. So be like, okay, at age 51, we're going to take your testicles away. What do you think would happen if we took your testicles away at 51? I'm not saying this is how you have to talk to your partner, but like explaining it in that sense, right? So if I took
shock and awe,
right? But it's a lot more like, oh, she's just, I don't understand what she's dealing with,
right? Yeah, like, it's a pretty good picture. Yeah,
it's like if I took my testicles off at age 51, how might you feel if your testicles were removed at age 51? I might be kind of more moody, right? Certainly, my libido might be affected. I'm going to have less energy. I'm going to, when you remove a man's testicles, just in case you'd like, we do this, I'm a urologist. They get hot flashes.
Mm.
Their bones get more osteoporotic. They lose muscle mass. They have an increased risk of diabetes. They have weight gain, especially around the middle. So really comparing this to be like, if we took a person with testicles and removed them, they would have the same symptoms. Because we do that. It's a prostate cancer treatment, right? So they have the same symptoms as a woman who goes through menopause. And I just think it's a wonderful way to realize, like, you can't see my ovaries. And they didn't get some women have surgical ovary removal, and mm-hmm. then all this stuff happens immediately on a Tuesday. Like, it can be a lot more sudden when you have surgical menopause. But to describe it in a way where I think he can say, oh, I get it now. I see how these things would happen to me if that's what happened to me at age 51.
That's good. And, you know, it's just like you said, I mean, he's not going to know. I mean, how is he supposed to know what's going on with you unless you tell him?
If you don't tell him, you've left him to guess.
Yeah, that never goes well.
And that never goes well. Yeah. Is she mad at me?
Maybe. Yeah.
Maybe. Right? Like, they're just going to guess then. And so it's like, if you providing information is not wrong.
Yeah. Well, and I think the more you talk about it, the more normalized it becomes between you as well, too.
Yeah.
So where can people find your book? Because I do think that everyone should get it. I think if you get it and you have a daughter of a certain age, you need to get it for her or your sister or maybe even your mother. Maybe she needs to get it too. So yeah, where can people find it?
Amazon's the easiest, and the audiobook just came out. And I did the audiobook, so it's pretty fun. It's pretty feisty. So on Audible is, yeah. I don't know if it's on Apple yet. Apple has an audiobook platform, but Audible's the biggest one.
Right.
So the audio for all the audiobook lovers.
How was that reading the book?
Fun. It's hard work, man. Whole new respect for like people who make their living off of their voice.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But fun. I mean, it wasn't that long of a book and it took 2 days, right? And then you think about like the real, like who audiobooked the Bible? Like who audiobooked Harry Potter? Like those are some significant texts. And mine is just this like, 180 page thing. So yeah. A whole new respect for those people.
I bet you were spent after that 2 days.
Exhausted. After the first day, like I hardly had a voice left. Whoa. But very fun. Like super, super fun.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm glad I did it. I have a new insight.
Yeah, exactly. So tell us a little bit about your podcast too, so that people can find you. And I do believe you have a membership that you offer as well. Tell me about those.
So the podcast is on all the main 7 platforms. You Are Not Broken. Most of my listeners are on Apple and Spotify. So that's great. That's going to hit 3 years, January 1st. And I'm like 150,000 away from a million total downloads. So
that's amazing.
It's growing. My little baby's growing. It's so fun. And then, so I started a membership for women who just wanted more, right? And wanted some, one-on-one and some coaching. Cause so much of this is like your mindset, right? Like your mindset around sex, your mindset around menopause, your mindset around your relationships, and really that coaching of like, how can you get, and coaches are expensive, good coaches, expensive.
Yes.
And so it's really like, how can I provide something that's a deeper dive? And I started this after I met with all of the sex therapists in my area where I live. And they're like, I'm booked. I'm not accepting new people. I'm booked. I don't even have a waiting list. And it's not to I'm not a therapist. I can't do therapy, but just being a resource for people. Cause a lot of people just need like to get stuff bounced off of people or to get a coach. They don't actually need therapy. Right.
Right. Right.
And so I was like, whoa, there's really no resources. I got to do something. So it's a lot of coaching. We have a private podcast. Earlier today, I did a menopause lecture and people typed in their questions. So it's just a little more access, kind of a higher level deep dive. I've got tons of like videos that go into like orgasm and desire and anatomy and menopause and mind work and coaching. So it's just like all of my content in one. I post like research papers in there, right? So people can have access to those if they want a deep dive. So like for the woman who's like, I need more than we've got a membership for.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So how do they join that membership?
KellyCaspersonMD.com. And then there's a membership link. Or they can get there via Instagram, KellyCaspersonMD.
Awesome. And I'll put all that in the show notes as well. So I have one last question for you. And like I was telling you, this podcast is kind of niched down. And we were talking earlier about the fact that it's very important to start taking care of yourself in your 50s to live longer and to live better as you live longer. How important are, say, your nutrition and exercise to that longevity and to that longevity of your sex life?
Super important. I mean, to me, they go hand in hand. And like, I think one, getting good at one makes you want to get good at the other one. And this is only personal experience. Like to me, it's a lot easier for me to exercise and be fit than to eat well. but it's like the more you exercise and are fit, the more you kind of want to eat well. Right. So they, I think right. they build on each other, uh-huh. right? And it's like the skills you use to become someone who exercises is a skill you use to become someone who prioritizes sex in her life. And what does that mean? It means like, I don't always have desire to go work out. I'm not sitting around saying, if only I had desire to exercise, then I would. Right. It's like, no. You go exercise.
Yeah.
You might like it while you're doing it. You might like it after you're done doing it. Right. Or you might be like, you know what? Didn't love much about that today, but I moved my body. It was good. I am a person who exercises.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's so it's never like a bad thing when you're done. Never.
Right. Yeah. And usually if you do sex, you know, properly of like, it's consensual, it mm-hmm. provides pleasure. It was a connection. Like it's never a bad thing when you're done.
Right.
But to sit around being like, I wish I was a person who exercised and had sex and ate well, of like, it's your job to become that person, and the skills you develop in becoming that person improves your life. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh no, that's, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's,
and the role of exercise on preventing dementia is insane. If there was a drug that did what exercise did for the brain, it would be bigger than Viagra. And like the, you know, the role of exercise in preventing cancer, heart disease, and you know, to add to your things for midlife is like, this is me shooting, but like seriously consider not drinking alcohol.
Like, I know.
It's just literally not good for you.
Yeah. You quit.
I quit a year and a half ago now.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like the personal growth involved in that is like awesome, but I'm kind of a personal growth junkie at this point in my life. It's mm-hmm. like, why wouldn't you want to figure out who you are without alcohol? It's amazing. But I mean, you can't say I'm doing everything I can to prevent cancer if you're still drinking alcohol. It's associated with eight major cancers. So it's literally a toxin that we use to numb and not feel our feelings. Like I literally can think of no upside.
Mm-hmm.
And I think especially in our middle age, when we're like, who do I want to be when I'm 74? I think a lot of people will say, I want my brain. I want to still be thinking. I still want to be creating. And alcohol basically shrinks your brain.
Mm.
So if you want to be that healthy 74-year-old, really reconsider the role of alcohol in your life.
Well, there's a message right there. That's intense.
We don't hear it enough.
That's true. No,
we do not hear it enough. Wine is marketed to moms horrifically.
Right.
Wine is marketed as a solution to every emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really not. But like the industry has no interest in you understanding that this thing causes cancer. Right. And so it's like, yeah, we are in the dark if you don't go figure that stuff out.
Yeah.
But there's
kind of like cigarettes back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. So there, you know, it's been branded. If you brand it as enjoy in moderation, you're led to believe moderation is okay.
Mm-hmm.
A big paper just came out that said under the age of 40, there is zero safe levels of alcohol. Super interesting, because you're like, well, what happens at 41, right? And the reason is you have so many more competing reasons for death now over the age of 41 that they're like, alcohol is actually a little bit less of like a major killer. But they said under the age of 40, there is zero safe levels of alcohol. And it's like, did that make the news? This is a major, you know, important point that just came out.
Yeah.
But people don't hear about that.
Well, they do now.
That's my alcohol. Sorry. We're here to talk. Sorry, everybody who just wanted to know where the clitoris was. Stay tuned for future episodes.
Yeah. Feisty was coming out there.
To me, it's like women need to know. They need to realize like, what they do is important to their body.
Well, you have to have all of the information so that you can make an informed decision or choice for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, everybody will make the choice, but as long as you know that that's what alcohol does and you choose to do it or to not, then we're good.
Yeah. I'll tie alcohol back to sex for a second. This is on the penis, but clitoris is the penis. It's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
They did this study where they had mild, moderate, and heavy drinkers. And I don't know how they got them to stop drinking. And they measured their rate of erectile dysfunction while they were drinking and then after they got sober. And erections came back with like a resounding force. Like penises don't like alcohol.
I want to put that on a t-shirt.
Yeah. And like the clitoris is basically a penis, right?
Right.
The penis is the male clitoris. There's my t-shirt. But alcohol is not good for your sex life.
Noted. Noted, ladies.
I think
Write
I talk
it
about
down.
Alcohol. I talk about alcohol a little bit in my book and just kind of explain how the drug actually works and stuff like that. Yeah, it's no good. Live your best life.
Yeah.
Don't drink alcohol. Don't numb your life away, man. Sorry, this is our only one.
I love it. This has been great. And I so appreciate you coming back and being on the podcast again. And I'm so happy to get to see you again.
Well, thank you for having me back and taking all of my tangents so graciously.
So you're going to have to come back again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Happy
awesome.
To.
Awesome.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks so much to Kelly for coming back to talk to us about her book, You Are Not Broken, but also to tell us what we should know about our bodies and about sex, about hormone therapy, about good communication, and then what we need to be doing to take care of our bodies and the life around us, because all of those things affect our sex life. I hope that you will go to the show notes for all of the places where you can find Kelly. They're going to be there, as well as a few takeaways from today's conversation, including these things. The first two things being what all women 50 plus should know about their bodies that they may not know already. Number one, the clitoris is where your orgasm comes from, not PIV. And that's what Kelly calls it in her book. That's penis and vagina. The clitoris is the target. And number two, everything in your life affects your sex life. Your sex life is not in a bubble. The way you live your life affects your sex life. So if you are sleeping poorly, if your health is bad, if your thoughts are negative, if your relationship isn't doing well, if you think the dishes in the sink getting done is more important than sex, all of these things are going to affect your sex life. Number three, it's important to ask yourself, who do you want to be when you are 74? You need to prioritize sleep and exercise and eating right, because if you want to keep feeling great long into the future, you've got to do the things that 74-year-old will be grateful that this 50-year-old put into thought and put into action. Number four, women's desire doesn't necessarily come before sex. It may come before, but it may come during, and it might not even happen till after, where you have that thought of, wow, that was great. I forgot how awesome that is. Please remind me next time and tell me how great it is. Number five, menopause is normal if you are blessed enough to live that long, because it is going to happen. And it's important to communicate with your partner about what you are learning about menopause and explain what you're going through. Otherwise, they are just going to be guessing. And that never goes well. Now, I hope you've enjoyed this episode. And if you have, first, make sure to follow this podcast so that all the new episodes are made available to you automatically and are put into your podcast library. And then please go to the bottom of the show page on your phone, if that's where you're listening, and rate and review this show, this episode. Those things are always appreciated and help make sure that this podcast comes up in more searches for people who are looking for good information and for things to listen to. And if you're wanting to do what Kelly says and start working on your best health now so that 74-year-old will thank you, but you just don't know where to start, well, I've got a couple of spots available for a midlife health Kickstarter call with me, where we will go through some basic nutrition and fitness options so that you can begin to get a grip on what you need to be working on to start down the road to better health. We will lay out a plan for 30 days that you can begin to utilize and see some benefits. And like Kelly said, once you start to see some progress in one area, you will want to improve in all the others. So if you're interested in one of those spots in December, send me an email at hello@leslielmcshane.com. Now that's LeslieLMcShane.com. And I will send you all the information. Now I'm sending you all good wishes for a good month and absolutely for great sex. And remember to show as much compassion to others as you yourself need today. Help make the world a better place right where you are. Till next time. See ya. Bye.